All right, we'll go ahead and get started this morning. Good to see you all. Grab your coffee and goodies. We've got some leftover cupcakes from someone yesterday. And you can take your Bibles and turn, please, to Revelation 13. All right, Revelation chapter 13. If you remember a couple weeks ago, we were in Revelation 12 talking about the fall of Satan to the earth and waging war. And now here in chapter 13, we're going to see some greater details about that. Thank you, Simon. Chapter 13 really is taken up with two personages.
The math didn't work either.
We have these two beasts that are mentioned. We have the first beast of chapter 13 in verses 1 through 10. And then we have the second beast of chapter 13 in verses 11 through 18. So our focus today is on the first 10 verses. So if someone could please volunteer to read the first 10 verses of Revelation 13. Who would like to do that? Ready? Jared, welcome home.
First 10 verses, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard, and its feet were like bears, and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast, and who can fight against it?" And the beast was given a mouth, uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. Also, it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. And authority was given it over every tribe and people and language and nation. And all who dwell on earth will worship it, everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the sword he must be slain. Here's a call for the endurance and faith of the saints.
All right, very good. Thank you very much. So we have, again, these two beasts, Revelation 13, beast number 1, which is where our focus will be today, and then beast number 2, verses 11 through 18, which we'll get to at a later date. Now, our text here in Revelation 13 really finds a lot of roots from some Old Testament texts. So, today, we're going to look at some of those, specifically in the book of Daniel, to try to get at least a running start into chapter 13 of Revelation. We're talking today about the Antichrist, and there's several passages of Scripture, Old Testament and New, that speak to this person which we call the Antichrist. But again, we're going to really focus a lot of our attention here, at least at the beginning, to Daniel. So turn with me, please, to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2. Daniel has sometimes been called or referred to as the key to unlock the book of Revelation, especially the second half of the book with all the prophetic information there. But we're going to look at some passages from Daniel 2. We'll turn then to chapter 7 and also look a little bit at chapter 8 to really help us fill out some information about who this beast is, what his function and role is in Jewish and world history. Okay, now we've been to Daniel before. We've turned to Daniel chapter 9, if you recall, several weeks ago now, when we began looking at chapter 4 and 5 and 6. with the tribulation period. We looked at Daniel's 70 weeks of prophecy from Daniel 9. Anybody remember that? Great. Lots of enthusiasm there. Yeah, I think so, Pastor. Sometime. I know it's there. Good. Well, we're going to look at Daniel 2 now and see some things here. Now, Daniel 2, you know I preached Daniel 1 today, so that would be a good indication that the next sermon from Daniel would be Daniel chapter 2. So I'm not going to give away the whole thing of my sermon for next time, but we know Daniel chapter 2 as being taken up with this dream that Nebuchadnezzar has, this incredible statue that he sees in this dream, the statue that's made up of all these different kinds of metal. He has this dream, but he has no idea what it's about. So he calls for all of his magicians and astrologers and all the chief guys of his kingdom, and he tells them, I want you to tell me what the dream is and what the interpretation of the dream is, which was unheard of to ask for both. Oftentimes, you know, someone have a dream, and they say the dream to someone, and then it's interpreted. But Nebuchadnezzar wants both. And of course, all his cohorts in the kingdom say, well, king, you know, we can't do that, and blah, 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 blah. And so the king's going to have all of them killed until someone can do what he says. And of course, Daniel is now in the scene we saw today at the end of chapter 1, that God gave Daniel understanding in visions and dreams. And so Daniel is called, and he says in verse 28 of chapter 2, there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets. That's a little clue for our theme for next week as well. We'll use that verse again. God is really in the mix of this. Okay, so there's this God. God allows Daniel to tell the king both the dream and the interpretation. The dream is this massive statue, all these metals. But we're going to jump ahead and begin in verse 36. So verse 36, this is the dream. Now we will tell the interpretation of it before the king. You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand, has made you ruler over all them. You are this head of gold. Okay? Here's the beginning of this interpretation of this statue, the head of gold, the chest of silver, the waist of bronze, the legs and feet of iron. You are the head of gold, Daniel says very clearly. Following him, he goes on, we won't read everything, but following him, he says, there's going to come a kingdom after you. That's the lesser kingdom. This depicted here is the chest of silver. There's going to come a kingdom after that. That's of even a bit lesser. A strength, a waist of bronze. And then following that is this fourth kingdom, the legs of iron, and then it's mixed with clay in the feet. And then part of this dream also was that after all that, Nebuchadnezzar sees the stone come and basically conquer it all. So a stone will then destroy them all, this last kingdom. Verse 44 says, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and it will break in pieces and consume all those kingdoms that will stand before. So we have this dream here, these four kingdoms, and the final one will come to rule over them, beginning with Nebuchadnezzar. But no more details really of this dream are given. We have the generic ideas. There's kingdoms that are going to follow Nebuchadnezzar. But all we know for sure as far as the identity, you, O king, are the head of gold. Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, is where it begins. Then we come to chapter 7. You can turn there if you want. We'll read a few verses from this chapter as well, but just I'll highlight a few things here. In Daniel chapter 7, we have now Daniel having a vision. The timing is, in verse 1, the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Belshazzar was, I think he was the great-grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, I believe, something like that. He was really a co-regent with his father, Nabopolassar, I believe was his name. But Belshazzar, this is now the first year of him, and Daniel, it says, has this dream of these four beasts. I have a depiction here. This is from Daniel's iPhone of these different creatures that he sees in this vision. We're not going to go deeply into their description yet because I'm going to save a lot of that for when I preach through it. But basically, we have this first beast like a winged lion, the second beast like a bear, the third beast like a winged leopard, and the fourth is just described as a terrible and dreadful beast. Sorry, I forgot to put these up here. The terrible and dreadful beast. That's how it's described. And these four beasts correspond also to those four parts of Nebuchadnezzar's statue that he saw in chapter 2. That information was given to Daniel in the first year of Belshazzar, who was the final king of the Babylonian Empire. Right? We know Belshazzar's feast, Daniel 5. This night, the kingdom will go to Medo-Persian Empire. And that night, he dies. 2 years later, Daniel receives another vision in Daniel chapter 8. And this vision is about a ram with two horns. One of these horns is bigger than the other, it describes there. Okay, so we have the ram with two horns, and also we have in this vision a male goat who comes at this ram with one big, I think the wording is notable, horn, and destroys the ram with two horns. But then this big notable horn breaks, and in its place, four others grow. Okay, so we have these described here. Let's read in chapter 8. We'll read a little bit here. Look in verse 20. This is now Gabriel giving the interpretation of what he has seen to Daniel. Verse 20. The ram which you saw, having the two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. The male goat is the kingdom of Greece. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. As for the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. So here we're given some more information. That ram with two horns, we're told, is the Medo-Persian Empire. The male goat, we're told that's Greece. And we're even given more information. The big notable horn, that's the first king. That was well-known Alexander the Great, right? The king of the mighty Grecian Empire, conqueror of much of the known world at his time. But what about the four? What about those four horns that grow in its place? What's that all about? Anybody know? We're told here, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. What is that referring to? Jared?
So after Alexander the Great died, four of his generals came up and started fighting for the power of the Greek Empire.
That's right. And the kingdom, the Grecian Empire, was really split into these four lesser powerful kingdoms. So that's the one turning into the four. Now, I'm going to put up here on the screen, again, I know this is very quick, not a lot of details, but we'll get into more of it as we go through the book of Daniel on Sunday mornings. A kind of comparison now, Daniel 2's vision, or the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, Daniel 7, Daniel 8, the visions that Daniel had, and the identity, how this all fits. So Daniel 2, we have the head of gold, which is likened to that first beast, the lion-like beast of Daniel 7. He's not given any information about that in Daniel 8. We're told very clearly, Daniel 2, you are the head of gold. That's Babylon. Then we're told, or just a little illustration of this, this is a picture taken from the Ishtar Gate of Babylon. Incredible structure that was dug up, I think, about 60-ish, 70 years ago, something like that, and largely reconstructed in a museum. This is a picture from that. Can't tell a lot of the details, but this is a winged lion, which is depicting Babylon. So that was very likely, a likely image for to represent Babylon. Okay, next we have the chest of silver in Daniel 2, the second beast, the bear-like beast in Daniel 7, which is likened to the ram in Daniel 8, and we're told that's Medo-Persian Empire, which followed right after the Babylonian. Then we're told the waist of bronze in Daniel 2, which is like the third beast, the leopard-like beast who is the male goat of Daniel chapter 8, we're told that that is Greece, the Grecian Empire. And that leaves then the final section of the legs and feet of iron in chapter 2, the fourth beast of chapter 7, which, following the chronology, would be the fourth great empire which followed Greece, which was who? Okay, this was Rome. Okay, so we're following just world history, that God, in his sovereignty, through dreams and through visions in the Old Testament days, was declaring not only to Daniel, but also to this pagan king, how God was the one who made kings and kingdoms rise and fall. God is the God of history. And we have that depicted here very briefly and succinctly, I know, but Daniel 2, Daniel 7, Daniel 8, and these are their identities. Now, what we need to look particularly at in the midst of this, especially Daniel 7 and Daniel 8, there's really nothing here in Daniel 2 about this, but in Daniel 7 and Daniel 8, we have mentioned this so-called little horn. Okay, I know we're jumping right in without a lot of detailed explanation, but stay with me. Look in chapter 7. Look in chapter 7 and verse 7. This is the fourth beast of Daniel's vision. I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom 3 of the first horns were plucked up by the roots, and there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. Look at verse 11. I watched then because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking, that little horn. I watched till the beast was slain and its body destroyed and given to the burning flame. As for the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. Jump down now to verse 19. Then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured, broke in pieces, and trampled the residue with its feet. And the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, before which fell 3, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints, prevailing against them, until the Ancient of Days came, and a judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample it, break it in pieces. That the 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall rise after them. He shall be different from the first ones, and shall subdue 3 kings. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time, and times, and half a time. Another one of those phrases that just indicates 3.5 years. But the court shall be seated, they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it forever. Then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. This is the end of the account. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly troubled me. My countenance changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. Can you imagine being Daniel and getting all this information? Seeing world history thousands of years ahead right before you. Now, this is a description here of this little horn. There's this, what we call the Antichrist, who we call the Antichrist. There's other descriptions about him as well. In chapter 8, verse 9, it also describes this little horn, gives further descriptions of him in verses 23 through 25. I won't read those now, but you can look at those later if you wish. There's other descriptions of him as well, but I think those will suffice. Now, what I've done
also is I've made a handout listing out 20 characteristics of the Antichrist. This is taken from a book I mentioned to you earlier by J. Dwight Pentecost called Things to Come. He has several pages. There's more than 20 that he included. I just picked out 20 to fit on a sheet like this front and back. You're welcome to pick one of those up afterwards and do more study on your own. What my intention here with this is to get us to understand what's happening in Revelation 13, which we'll get to in just a minute, has its roots in what God first told Daniel in Daniel chapter 7 and chapter 8 and even in chapter 9 some things. Okay? That at least makes sense. I was like maybe taking a drink from a fire hose, I don't know, but does that at least make some kind of sense so far? Okay, very good. Now again, Daniel 2 will be the subject of next Sunday's sermon, Lord willing. But this is where we want to go. So this Antichrist, this so-called little horn, is the subject of this first beast of Revelation 13. So let's turn back there now. Revelation 13, and we'll talk through a little bit about this passage here. Okay, Revelation 13, we have this first beast that says that rises out of the sea. Now, there's different thoughts. What does that mean? This first beast that rises out of the sea. What does that indicate? Some have said, well, maybe it indicates the Mediterranean Sea, and Rome is right in the Mediterranean Sea. So maybe this beast is someone who is coming from Rome. That's just a figure of speech meaning this beast comes from Rome. Is it the sea which would represent the Gentile nations? Some have said that as well, as opposed to the earth, meaning the Jewish nation. What is this? Well, I think probably the most viable option, again, we try to use Scripture to help interpret Scripture as best we can. Another passage that talks about this beast is in chapter 17, verse 8. Chapter 17, verse 8 says, "The beast that you saw will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition." Okay, now, my best guess about what this beast is, what it means that this beast came out of the sea, is that that was a way to describe the abyss, as 17:8 says very clearly, the bottomless pit. So that's what I'm going to say. This first beast rises out of the sea. He comes out of the abyss. It also tells us in chapter 13, verse 1, the end of the verse, on his head's a blasphemous name. He has a blasphemous name. Now notice how many times, even as Jared read it earlier, how many times in the passage the idea of blasphemy is used with this first beast. We have it there in verse 1. It's also in verse 5. It says, "He was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies." Also in verse 6, "He opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name," and other things. What does it mean to blaspheme? What does it mean to blaspheme? To speak against?
To set yourself as equal to God.
That can be a way to do it, yes. That's a description of that. To set yourself up as equal to God. You blaspheme the God by doing that. Other thoughts there? What does it mean to blaspheme? Yeah, speak irreverently about God or sacred things, to speak ill of them. We could even use the word slander. That is a word to help describe what this idea is. So this first beast is full of this. This is one of the chief characteristics of what he will do, what he will say. Blasphemy will pour out of his mouth. Slanderous words, defaming God, defaming God's people, defaming God's temple, all these different things, setting himself up, as we'll see as the text goes on in other chapters, setting himself up to be like God. Yeah.
So anti-truth, liar.
Yeah, anti-truth, anti-liar, right. Or liar, not anti-liar, anti-truth. Yes. So that's one of the big characteristics of this first beast. We normally call him the Antichrist, but that word is not used of him here in Revelation. That word Antichrist only shows up in John's epistles. But we call him this because he is the Antichrist. John said there are many Antichrists who enter into the world, but this is the one which all of those really point to. This is the Antichrist. This is the one who is against Christ. Yeah.
What makes not the Antichrist, but other Antichrists? What's the qualifications for that? Anybody against God, or is it some sort of somewhere they have to reach some level 7 of evil to be rated as Antichrist? Is there a determination?
Well, I think the blasphemy idea really comes into play there. Really, anyone who will blaspheme God has the spirit of Antichrist in him. So I'm not going to go up to someone necessarily and say, you are Antichrist. That has been done before. I would not recommend that, but that has been done to people like the Pope. Okay. Now, the spirit of Antichrist is certainly there, but he is not the Antichrist. But to set himself in opposition to God, that would be an anti-Christial thing to do, if I coined a word. Ritz, were you going to say something?
I was just wondering, the Antichrist is not the devil himself.
No. The devil will empower him, we'll see that. Yeah. But the devil, the word slipped my mind, is not him. That was bad, but proper, that's the word I was looking for. The devil proper is not the Antichrist, but the devil will empower and give his authority to the Antichrist who will come, yeah.
Now, yes? The Antichrist is a man, mm-hmm. But is it a spirit that's coming out of the abyss? It's not a man coming out of the abyss, right?
Well, the horn is described, chapter 17, verse 8, the beast that is described here will ascend out of the bottomless pit. The Antichrist himself is a man. I don't think it means that a physical man is being held in the bottomless pit today, but it is the spirit that will.
I think it's maybe a demon or
right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay, so the person is called here the beast. Again, we normally call him the Antichrist. And this is what this first beast is about. So it goes on, verse 2. The beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear. His mouth like the mouth of a lion. Pause. Does that remind anybody of anything? What's that?
The devil walking about as a roaring lion.
Okay, the devil walking about like a roaring lion. Does it remind anybody else of anything? The other beasts of Daniel. We just looked at them. Remember that vision that Daniel had of those four beasts, Daniel 7? The lion, the bear, the leopard. This Antichrist will come really as the culmination and the embodiment, in a sense, of those other kingdoms. This is the dreadful and terrible king, the culmination of all that. He will come really doing what all those other kingdoms wished they could do. Okay, now I'm going to stop there. I put on your table, each of your tables, a piece of paper with a pen. I want you to take some time, and I want you to go through the rest of verse 2 through verse 8, and I want you to write down other characteristics, descriptions of this beast, of this Antichrist. Okay, and talk through it, and don't just write out the verses, okay? Write down descriptions, talk about what could this mean, what is this going to look like, and take a few minutes to do this as a table. Okay, let's talk through this. By the way, kudos to Gene and Lorna for giving Rick authority to write down their answers. I think they were the only table that had a male scribe. So. Kudos to them. All right, so let's talk about verse 2. I did the first part. How about the second part of verse 2? The dragon gave him his power, his throne, his authority. What is that? What did you write down about that? Any thoughts about that? Besides the dragon gave him power and authority. Okay, who's the dragon? Okay, Satan. So Satan is the one who gives him this authority. He embodies, verse 2 I talked about, he embodies all the beasts of Daniel 7. The dragon, Satan, gives him his power, his throne, and his authority. So the Antichrist is not Satan proper, but Satan gives him that authority. Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, and apparently this comes especially in this latter part of the tribulation period. We'll talk about this later, but the 3.5 year, the 42 months, there is this delineation. The Antichrist is around before this, but now this is really an empowerment by the devil giving him this authority. Okay? Let's go on to verse 3. We'll talk through a couple more of these. Verse 3. Did you get... I don't want to give away the answer. Verse 3, I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded. His deadly wound was healed. What is that about? What did you write? Don't be bashful.
He has a big, massive scar on his head.
Okay.
What?
Has a big, massive scar on his head. Okay. Other thoughts?
He's trying to impersonate Christ.
Okay, perhaps he's trying to impersonate Christ. The question about this is this an example of this Antichrist literally dying and literally coming back to life? If so, who brought him back to life? And is there have been questions, is bringing someone back to life something Satan could do? There's a question about that. Some have thought that this Antichrist, if it was Rome, is indicating... some believe it would be Nero. There was an early belief that Nero would come back to life. So some have thought maybe this is a reference to Nero as this person. Yes?
Well, it does say, Mark said, seemed to have a mortal wound. So
right.
Could it possibly be that there was an actual mortal wound? So, like, people get shot in the head and they live.
And, go ahead. I don't want to.
They live. So, I mean, that's like astounding, and people would think they die. So, maybe it wasn't actually a mortal wound.
Right. And that's another idea. Maybe it made it look like he had a mortal wound and then look like he came back to life. So the verse says, I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded and his deadly wound was healed. And then the worship is brought about after that as well. So perhaps he will die and be raised to life or at least appear to have done so. Yeah, Deb?
Since Satan is... the great deceiver.
Yep.
And that would cause people to be full of wonder if
yep.
he doesn't die.
Right.
Could he make it appear that this was horrible and look, he did not die?
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely an option.
Yeah, we thought potential. Maybe we're supposed to get the appearance of immortality.
Yeah. And to address Ian's point, this was a mechanism, whatever way it was. This is the Antichrist that this being could at least look like, if not was dead and raised to life. That would be something you would think it would have caught the Jews' attention the first time. But this time it does, for whatever reason. And so verse 3 goes on, all the world marveled and followed the beast. And let's do one more verse 4. So verse 4 says the people, so they worshiped the dragon. That's the devil who gave the authority. And they worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast, who is able to make war with him? Any thoughts on that verse that you wrote down? Verse 4? Yeah, Johnny?
He had a great following in the world, which then pulling out of that just was a crowd.
Right. Yeah. Great authority in the world and also. Now, there's no, we're not told if he died, how he died, or who it was that initiated that. We're not told any of that information. But we're told the result of whatever that situation was. That this one who was, as it were, dead and came to life, the world marveled and worshiped both the dragon, Satan, and the beast, the Antichrist. They marveled at all of what was happening here. Okay, it is like 8 after. I think we'll stop there for today. If you have that paper, put it in a Bible and bring it back next week, and we'll continue the discussion. All right. Thank you. You're dismissed.